You are listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. Consider some of Arizona's best-known politicians and elected officials. The names that most often come to mind are Barry Goldwater, Carl Hayden, Mo Udall, and in more recent days, John McCain, Bruce Babbitt, Janet Napolitano. But only one person held three of the highest offices, Ernest McFarland. He was elected governor of Arizona. He was also Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, and he served as the U.S. Senate's majority leader as well. McFarland's greatest accomplishment as a senator was likely his work creating the GI Bill after World War II. So to mark that, and to talk about a refurbished memorial for McFarland at the state capitol in Phoenix, I'm joined by two of McFarland's grandchildren, John Lewis and Kara Lynn Lewis, Kara Lewis's husband, Fritz Aspie, and historian Vince Murray. Vince, let me start with you. When you think about names like Barry Goldwater, Carl Hayden, Ernest McFarland accomplished a tremendous amount and was elected to these major positions. Is he someone who doesn't get enough attention? Is he ignored in some ways?
Well, you mentioned Carl Hayden, and one of the quotes that people are most familiar with Carl Hayden is, when you become a public servant, you can be a workhorse or a show horse. And in this instance, you have a person who's truly a workhorse. He was a senator, and as a senator, he worked really hard to deal with the issue of World War II with the GIs. He also was instrumental in getting the same educational and loan benefits for the Korean War veterans as well. That was one of the last things that he did while he was still in office. As governor, in a similar way, he came in seeing that Arizona was getting a little bit behind what was really going on in the United States. So he was instrumental in getting tax incentives put together to bring businesses to Arizona, a lot of them high-tech businesses. Sperry Rand would be one of them, who came in right afterwards. The idea being, then, taking these tax benefits, you would have people that would want to come work for these businesses, and they would be then in turn employing people, bringing in income tax, building houses, building properties, bringing in property taxes, and it worked quite effectively for them. As a Supreme Court justice, he was a little bit different there. You don't really see so much coming back on what the impact was that he had, but he was elected to that position. And here was a person who had been in law, had really made law his career, and that to him was the ultimate achievement that he could make. And taking it seriously as being an elected official, he wrote over 300 opinions within the term that he was there, averaging over 50 a year.
Wow.
And he was just a diehard person, coming into work early in the morning, working in the evenings. If you ever talked to people who worked in his staff, they thought it was just incredible, the types of things that he was doing, and he was very consistent, and then he was quite proud of that. And here's a guy who literally started off born in a one-room cabin kind of thing, coming to Arizona with $10 in his pocket, and becomes quite successful. But in turn, his success made success easier for other people, too. That's why we talk about this issue of the American dream not being something about homeownership, but more being the capability of being all you can be. And that's what he was actually creating in the process of doing these things.
Mm-hmm. Was there a certain family connection to the military? Was there a particular reason he thought this was so important?
The veterans who returned really had very little options. In fact, Mac actually didn't serve in the war itself. He became sick while he was still in what was called kind of a boot camp back then. But if you were to look at what happened with the veterans, and probably the greatest injustice was Anacostia Flats outside of Washington, D.C., where they camped out and were trying to get their benefits, and they weren't able to, and literally the military came and ran them off.
Mm.
And that was one of the things that he said when he was working on the GI Bill, was we can't let something like Anacostia Flats happen again. We have to have something for these guys to come back to. And when you look at the number of people that served in World War I compared to World War II, you had 12 million service people coming back, the majority of them men, of course, but they were coming back to really nothing. I mean, there was no jobs, there were no benefits that they could see. And while you had the American Legion and other entities working on making sure that they had health benefits, there were no jobs. There were none of these other things. So basically what he had put together was, if you came back, you could go to college, you could go to a trade school, you could get a loan with the government covering it for a low interest rate for a house or to start a business. So now these guys actually had something to look forward to when they came back. And so there were two things. He wanted to see that the veterans didn't have something bad happen to them like Anacostia Flats, but he also didn't want to see us go back into a depression again with truly 12 million unemployed people coming all back into the market at once.
And John and Carol, what is it like to have a grandfather with this kind of legacy? I mean, how does it feel to know that all these decades later, this impact that your grandfather had is still really felt?
The thing about my grandfather that really strikes me is what a hard worker he was. My God, that guy would work. And he just wouldn't give up on things and kept going and going. And if you look at his life, all of those themes were reflected through many parts of his life. You know, losing the Senate seat, okay, I can go be governor. Okay, he's done with that. All right, I'll be a judge. And he just never gave up. And for us, building that memorial, it was a lot of work for us. Vince and I had to go down and look and count all of his rulings, because we came across literature that said Ernest McFarland made over 300 opinions. Mm-hmm. Well, is that 301 or is that 399? Well, we counted them. It's 315. And we had to know those things. And as his grandson, he instilled real hard work ethic in me. To know him personally, he was always a very honest man and wanted to do the right thing. He also didn't really care that much. Vince talked earlier about the workhorse and the show horse. Mm-hmm. He, to me, was the workhorse. And the other thing about this workhorse, Ernest McFarland, he didn't care that much about who got attention. He wanted to get things done. And he wanted to make a change. And he was focused on what he was doing, how to make our nation better, how to make Arizona better. And he wasn't out pounding his chest and like what you see so much today.
Fritz, I don't want to leave you out. Is there a...
You know, I'm a lawyer, and so I guess the angle of vision that I bring to this discussion is from a lawyer's perspective. I was very impressed when I learned that he had written 315 Arizona Supreme Court opinions. But his career was even greater than that. He served as a assistant attorney general, a county attorney, a superior court judge, as we've discussed, the chief justice of the Supreme Court. And in one remarkable instance, he actually, when he was governor, went back to the United States Supreme Court and argued a very famous water law case, California versus Arizona. And that's just unheard of. You know, no governor does that. Mac did. And so he was an extraordinary person. He was very instrumental in getting the CAP.
Is there something that stands out about the memorial in particular? If people go down to the Capitol and they see it and they just have a couple of minutes, they're just sort of passing by, but they want to take a quick stop. John, is there something for you that really stands out that you would say, please take this away from what you see? Is there a takeaway that you would really like people to have?
Hopefully you'll have a little bit more than a few minutes, but Vince, the Don Ryden, our historical architect, designed a lot of the ways to tell this story where you can walk in, you can look at pictures, you can read these caption type kind of in poetic form. And then if you're the type that really wants the nuts and bolts and the hard facts, look down at the bottom of the interpretive panels, and there's a timeline that tells you a lot. So it was designed for people with however much you want to get out of this. It's a beautiful arch that you get to walk under. The arch encapsulates the American flag that's off the USS Arizona Memorial, and that American flag is the symbol of the country that allows us to have an American dream. I know a lot of people are kind of debating if the American dream's dead or not, but in school and back then it was, and this really helped. And yeah, it's a lot of work went into it, and I'm very proud the way it turned out, and I like the way it looks, and just very happy that we could do this.
Kara, same thing for you. Yeah,
I have a lot of memories of family. He's just a fabulous family man, and I even brought a picture, too.
Yeah, describe the picture for us, yeah.
My mom and dad, Grammy and Mac, myself, and Bill. I don't think you were born yet, John. But it's really, he was a fabulous family man. He'd come down they'd come down every Saturday and check on the farm and meet with, you know, do farm business.
And Fritz, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you were asking questions about the memorial. One thing that I think is kind of neat about the memorial, there's a water pump there. Which is interesting. There's a little saying there that you know, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting, or words to that effect. And I think that memorializes Mac's effort to preserve water rights in Arizona. And so it's got a lot of interesting things, a lot of aspects to the memorial that are really well thought out.
Yeah, from the GI Bill to the Central Arizona Project, really, really amazing. Vince, final few seconds?
So the one thing, you know, I would like the listeners to take away from this is that, you know, as the true public servant of Mac, as, you know, we've said, he was governor, he was a Supreme Court justice, he was a senator, he preferred to be called Mac. That was the thing. Even his grandchildren referred to him as mm-hmm. Mac. Everybody pretty much called him Mac, and he was even chastised when he became a Supreme Court justice on his emphasis of being called Mac. Lorna Lockwood, who was the chief justice at the time, basically said, "Look, you're a Supreme Court justice. They have to refer to you as that. They have to stop calling you Mac, at least while you're in the courtroom."
That was historian Vince Murray, along with Fritz Aspe, Kara Lynn Lewis, and John Lewis. We've been marking Veterans Day by talking about former Arizona Governor Ernest McFarland, who was instrumental in creating the GI Bill when he was U.S. Senate Majority Leader.